Accession number 10657, reel 34.
I think you were saying that your reconnaissance was rather hampered by a heat haze.
Yes, it was very, very hot indeed, and there was a heat haze. And we did see one or two Germans stripped to the waist, sort of wandering about on the other side of the river. But that was all. There was nothing else. And as I said, you know, we were doing it pretty thoroughly. We'd got binoculars. We swept from left to right. We went from front to back. We did it all the textbook way. We really went over every yard of that ground. But there was nothing we could see of where the Germans actually were, or where we would have to expect them. Sherman down by the bridge fired occasionally at any movement around the farm buildings on the north bank, very near to the north end of the bridge. Apart from this, it was deceptively quiet, and it was a sort of lull preceding a stiff battle which all the old hands knew only too well.
Did you have any more signs of people getting jittery about this? Because
Yes. I mean, you could on this high ground. It had been a Luftwaffe rest camp where A Company was, and in this area there was a wooden privy, and I think that, well, quite definitely, this was seldom without an occupant for the next 2 hours. There was a steady queue of people who, having done the recce and had a good look at the other side of the river, thought, my God, there's something horrible about this, and immediately disappeared into the privy for a few minutes, and out they came, and in went the next chap. Now, I think we were beginning to get the message that we knew the 9th Battalion had been pretty heavily clobbered that morning, and I think we were beginning to get the message that this wasn't going to be an easy one at all, and the whole thing was all too deceptively quiet and unreal. There was something behind it that we didn't know anything about. Of course, that was the sunken road.
Did you find, you know, that the more experienced members of the company were rather more worried by this than the chaps who were fresh?
Well, I think they were worried that they might be worrying the new guys. So, I mean, they try not to. I mean, yeah, you know, it's no good painting a vivid picture of how horrible it was at Marath and Alamein and saying it's going to be a damn sight worse here if you're talking to a chap who's never been in action before. But you're never going to change the sort of pessimistic attitude of some people, even officers. I mean, names I won't mention. But there was one particular officer in the 8th Battalion, after every COSO group, when we got outside, we'd say, well, that's it. That's the finish. That's our lot. We're never going to come out of this lot alive. And, of course, he said it all the time, and said it to NCOs and men as well, which didn't go down at all well. The best thing to do, if you could possibly do it, was not to let them know how serious it was, quite honestly. And that was the job of the officers, not to show that things might be pretty bad. But because if you did, whilst the officers had still got plenty to do, the poor unfortunate troops had got nothing else to do but sit around and think.
But presumably, soldiers who'd been through a bit of action would know immediately, once they saw the ground, that it's going to be rather sticky.
Not unless they knew about the sunken road as well. If they'd known about that, then I mean, it would have been immediately apparent that that was about the toughest obstacle the battalion had ever had to tackle. But the sunken road not being visible, it just looked like vines on the other side. And once we got clear of the vines, we were in open country, going up towards Catania, quite open on the far side of the sunken road and the vines. But anyway, this Luftwaffe rest camp, there were tents up there, which had been the HQ, the officers' mess and the sleeping quarters, and Chris Beattie, commanding A Company, made his company HQ inside the mess tent. There was a half-consumed meal on the table. The Germans had left in a hurry. It was an officer's rest camp, and there was a lot of booty lying around. So A Company did extremely well, and this was one occasion when the carrier platoon didn't get all the spoils. There were cameras, there were air-filled Lilo mattresses, one of which I actually got back to England eventually with my kit. There were fleece-lined flying coats, and one of those I got back to, and cameras, and all sorts of things. So that was A Company's rest area. We got a hot meal late in the afternoon, and also we were told that a rum ration would be issued just before the attack. And then at dusk, the Shermans of the 44th RTR, that's 4th Armoured Brigade, positioned themselves 200 yards from the bridge and to the left of the bridge. They were about 100 yards south of the river, and their job was to give covering fire for A and D immediately prior to the assault. Well, they had the vines to fire at, but they'd also got any movement going on in the farmhouses on the northern end of the bridge. During the evening the 6th Durhams moved into the 8th DLI area. It was a clear moonlight night, and at 10 o'clock A and D companies left the assembly area and marched to the forming up place. My company and C company stayed where we were, back in the assembly area. Colonel Pearson and one or two of his paratroopers, who'd also stayed behind, were waiting for them. They, in fact, had taped a route from the FUP to the river at dusk.
How far from the river was the FUP?
The forming up place, I don't know. I can't tell you that, because we didn't get involved in that at all. I suppose you usually tape for about 200 or 300 yards, something like that, I would have thought.
But I would assume the FUP couldn't be undercover because
underground. No, that's right. Well, I mean, the FUP undercover in so much as when you got there, you could lie down behind and have the shelter of this little bank on the southern part of the river, which had sheltered the 9th Battalion after their abortive attack that morning. Well, while this was going on, B and C companies with battalion headquarters and the supporting arms moved to another assembly area east and west of the main road, about 1,000 yards south of the bridge. So that's A and D companies down at the river and us back up the road. Now, the barrage opened at 12:50, and the Czech machine guns as well. It was a very heavy barrage for such a narrow front, and Ken Kershaw, the adjutant, and I climbed onto the roof of a power station adjacent to the road, and it was really quite a sight. And from where we were, it looked as though a devastating artillery barrage was going down on the enemy positions. But as we've said earlier, it's very doubtful whether very much of it got into the sunken road. A lot of it was being wasted in the vineyards. At 1:20, that's 1:20 in the morning, the artillery and the Cheshires raked the vineyards beyond the scimitar, but still the sunken road could not be seen. And 10 minutes before 0 hour, the artillery blasted the northern end of the bridge. The Cheshires, as I say, in fact, were on the high ground behind us. we were on top of this fairly high tower, and their fire was shooting just above us on a very high trajectory and then dropping down towards the river.
Did the Germans reply to that barrage in any way?
With their own guns? If they did, I don't recollect there was any. I don't think so. No
counter-battery fire?
No, I think they were quite happy to hold their fire until they had got a better use for it. I mean, I think they really wanted to encourage the attack, because they thought that once the our infantry got over there, they'd be able to deal with them, which didn't in fact happen, because we held on. But I think I don't think they'd have bothered very much about counter-battery fire then. But I don't recollect that there was any anyway. Now, 0 hour, and this was 2:10 in the morning, the tanks opened up with their beezers, and Colonel Pearson and his paratroops led A and D Company across the river, together with the CO, Colonel Lidwell, and they forded the river at two points about 50 yards apart. They had no difficulty getting across and no interference from the other side. But if you remember, the crossing places were quite a long way down from the bridge. However, the average depth of the river, although it was only 4 feet, as had happened earlier in the morning, several deep holes made by shells, and one or two men had to be rescued from drowning, in actual fact, because with their equipment they got into a shell hole and they just went straight down. On the far bank of the river, A Company on the right and D Company on the left, the two companies turned to the right and moved towards the bridge along the river bank. But here again they ran into problems, because the vineyards came right down to the river bank. They were thick, closely planted, entwined, made movement very difficult. Sections and platoons had to shout numbers, their platoon and section numbers, to keep direction. It would have been difficult enough by day, and it had been in fact, but it was doubly difficult by night. But it was an unusual form of attack. It took the enemy by surprise, and most of the defenders on the bridge had withdrawn. Now, we think that most of them went back to the sunken road.
Would this include the Italians who were
yes,
in the houses?
Yes, the although quite a few of them had been killed by the gunfire, actually. But certainly the ones that hadn't been killed by the guns had actually withdrawn.
Had the
most of them
artillery done any damage to the vineyards?
Not to the vineyards. Well,
not the vineyards.
I don't know, because it was dark and I didn't actually, they're all so close together that any damage you do is bound to be make it more difficult for movement.
Presumably, the vines were running north south rather than east west.
Can't remember. I think they would have been there. I mean, I would have thought the vines would have been
parallel with the road going up to
Catania. Parallel
with
the road, I would have thought, yes, but I'm not quite sure about that.
Because otherwise, moving from left to right would have been quite easy if you just walked between the roads.
Oh
the
yes,
vines, wouldn't it?
Oh yes, dead easy. Yes. No, it's but they were entwined quite a lot as well. Certainly, the ones down by the river were. So you had to sort of maybe move a bit to the left to get round a couple. You couldn't go between.
Sounds as though they hadn't been pruned or
could be,
or looked
could
after
be.
For some time.
Could be. There's no doubt about it. It was a very, very big obstacle to movement, more so down by the river than it was as they went up the road. There was some automatic fire coming from the left, but the two companies ignored it because their job was to get to the bridge. But of course that automatic fire was coming from the sunken road. The enemy were using tracer, so it wasn't too difficult to dodge it, rather like Alamein. You could dodge under it. and the heavy our heavy artillery fire had killed quite a few of the enemy on the northern side of the bridge and the farm buildings and the pillboxes, and others had withdrawn up the road. Now, Don Company was... D Company headquarters was established in a ditch adjacent to one of the farmhouses on the other side of the Catania Road. Heavily mortared immediately, they got in there. So the Germans had got that registered, and as soon as our chaps got in, they mortared it. A Company, meanwhile, had cut some barbed wire. They'd rushed the pillboxes at the northern end of the ridge, routed the defenders who were left with grenades, Tommy gun, bayonet, and the company objective of A Company was on the far side of the Catania Road. The road was under Spandau fire, and it wasn't easy to get across.
Well, they got a Spandau firing directly down.
Yes, I'm sorry, I've got to go back on this. I'm sorry about that, but D Company's Company HQ, in fact, was established on the near side of the Catania Road, and they were then mortared. D Company, in other words, didn't go across the Catania Road. They got as far as it, but they didn't actually cross it. They remained on the left of the Catania Road and on the left of... facing northwards.
But A Company did have to cross the road, didn't they?
Yes, C Company actually went across the road. They rushed the pillboxes at the northern end of the bridge, routed the defenders. Their company objective was on the far side of the Catania Road. The road was under Spandau fire, wasn't easy to get across, but most of them ran the gauntlet safely. Some men were wounded. Captain Beattie, A Company commander, and his men then cut some more barbed wire and pushed on to their objective, which were vineyards about 500 yards from the Catania Road, where the river turns sharp north. Now, he put all his three platoons up, 7, 8 and 9 platoon, 7 on the left, 8 and 9 on the right, all platoons up, and, as you'll see, was a long way away from the bridge. A Company dug in. They were about 100 yards north of the river. Spandaus were sweeping the area from the road. It was the worst defensive position that A Company had ever occupied. From the slit trenches that they dug very quickly indeed, it was only possible to see a few yards. There were vines, shrubs, tall grass and trees close together. A Company couldn't see what was happening in front of them, even when they were standing up. Remember, it's still dark. And grenades were thrown at close range by the paras, by the Germans, paratroops, who came in pretty close and threw the grenades, and off they went again. So they were in a fairly precarious position, A Company. And as you will see, that proved to be the point a little later on. Now, with both those companies actually across the scimitar, and D Company in the area of Catania Road and the bridge, A Company rather out on a limb, phase one of the battle, of the attack, was deemed to be successful, and it was time to bring the remainder of the battalion down to cross the bridge. Now, the colonel wanted to contact rear battalion headquarters to bring my company forward and also C Company. That's right. Now, he got three methods which had been worked out during the O Group stage. First of all, a 2-inch mortar flare fired from the northern bank would indicate that the attack had been successful. The mortars and the bombs got separated in the dark. One flare, in fact, did go up, but it wasn't seen. So the signal was not recognized as such. Secondly, by wireless contact. But both of the company wireless sets were drowned during the fording of the river, so there was no wireless link. Third, Colonel Liddell had positioned at our end of the bridge, that's the southern end, a Bren carrier in which was an RE officer whose job would be at a later stage to recce the bridge for mines, and the carrier was equipped with a wireless which could be operated by the carrier platoon commander, Jerry Lowen, who was in there. So Colonel Liddell went back over the bridge to get the carrier, to find the carrier, but he found that it had got a direct hit. Both the officers were dead and the wireless was out of action. So that's three possibilities gone down the drain. Now, all he could do now was either walk up the Catania up the road for 1,000 yards to where B and C companies waited, or he could try and get one of the Shermans on our side of the river to link in their wireless with ours. Now, there was quite a lot of firing from the other side of the bridge by now. The tank engine was running, so that was fairly noisy. So, and the commander's head was showing just above the turret, but there were no tank crew outside. So Bob walked up to the tank and tapped the commander's head where it showed above the turret, I think with his cane or something, at which point the tank closed down immediately with a loud clang, sealed itself like a sardine tin, and nothing more was seen of the occupants. So they obviously thought that something else had tapped the commander on the head and they didn't want to know. So he was in an absolute quandary, didn't know what to do, and sees an officer in uniform cycling along the road towards the bridge and stopped him. It wasn't one of our officers, and said, "Who are you?" And this chap said, "Well, my name's Wigram. I'm a War Office observer." So Bob said, "Well, you've come at a very opportune time. Do you mind pedalling back up the road to find two of my companies who are waiting up there and ask them to move forward immediately?" Now, if Wigram hadn't in fact come along, it would have meant a runner or somebody going back up the road. Might bear in mind by this time there wasn't anything left on this side of the river. Battalion HQ was all on the other side. Could have held up the attack even longer. Anyway, the next thing that we knew, I knew, was that this chap's peddling furiously arrives at my county headquarters and said, "Your colonel wants you down at the bridge right away." But we, in fact, I'd almost reached the stage where I was going to move down anyway, so we were ready to move, and off we went. We went down in single file. We passed the wrecked carrier. We crossed the bridge, and there were lots of mines about on the surface, so you had to be careful and sort of weave your way between the mines. And on the far side, as we drew level with the blazing farm buildings, they were still bombs were still blazing on the left, where D Company were, and Battalion HQ, somebody shouted out, and I think I know who it was, but I won't mention any names, they shouted out, "Push on, B Company, there's only a few ITIs up in front." So we started advancing up the Catania Road. But as there was a little bit of small arms fire beginning to splatter around, I decided that we'd be better off in the ditch than on the road itself. And I took to the ditch on the left of the road, and C Company took to the ditch on the right of the road. So we were off the road, very fortunately. Because about 300 yards north of the bridge and on the near side of this sunken road, which we still knew nothing about, all hell was let loose when the Spandaus opened up at very close range. And it was in fact a prelude to the 20 minutes of the fiercest hand-to-hand fighting that the 8th had ever known up to that stage of the war. the leading sections, remembering it was dark, although it was moonlit, it was dark, but you've got these big poplar trees throwing their shadows over the road. Poplar trees flanking the road, and the leading sections were almost on top of the spandaus, one of which was on the right of the road on the C Company front, on the right of the road, before they opened up. So the forward sections of B and C were literally cut down. Practically wiped out my leading platoon with the platoon commander, Dick Holloway. And I think if we hadn't been in the ditch on both sides of the road, the casualties would have been very, very much heavier. Very much heavier. So it was a wise thing that we did to get into the ditch. So far as my chaps were concerned, they recovered remarkably well from the ditch. The B Company Brens, or the ones that were up there, from the ditch on the left of the road, swept the opposite side of the road continuously, where the spandau was. And from where I was in the ditch, I shouted out to the company, B Company, get away from the road into the vines.
So they were to move leftwards then?
Move left into the vines. We were better off in the vines than in the ditch. Now, C Company, meanwhile, had tried to work round behind the German spandau. And this was where one of the C Company platoon commanders, Jacko Jackman, led a few of his men in a charge against the nearest spandau, which was the one on the right that had initially opened up on all of us, on C Company coming up in front of it and on my company over to
along with the
right,
ditch.
Looking from the gun, yes. Now, they in fact were all shot down almost on top of the spandau, and Jackman was wounded. However, this combination of the B Company Brens firing across at the spandau as well, and Jackman's charge, forced the Germans in the vicinity of the road to pull back. So that did give us a little bit of breathing space, so far as the road was concerned, and the two ditches. Now, with C Company on the other side of the road, we'd lost contact with them altogether. And B Company went off into the vines with bayonets fixed, where, of course, the Germans were waiting. Now, the front half of B, which was about, I suppose, 1.5 platoons or something like that, that's my leading platoon plus part of another platoon, got involved in what can really only be described as a game of hide and seek. It was every man for himself. There was no quarter asked, there was none given. It was very difficult in the shadows to see whether you were firing at a friend or the enemy until the very last minute. There were individual firefights all over the place, hand to hand, and my Sergeant Major Brannigan, who was a great man with the bayonet, was doing a great deal of damage.
What do you think was the best weapon to have for that kind of...
Well, I think that in those conditions, a bayonet's not bad, because you can fire a rifle, and in a sort of very, very close country of that sort, a bayonet's going to be pretty useful if you use it properly, I think. And the funny thing is that at a later stage in the battle, the Germans did, which was very unusual for them, to my knowledge anyway. But a lot of B Company were shot down at point blank range. A lot of Germans were. Quite a few of the paras were lying down and shooting along the vines, and we got in behind them and we were able to knock off a few like that. But what some of the paras had actually strapped themselves up in the trees, in the poplar trees, and they fired from above. Most of them died up there, in fact, because as soon as they gave away their position by firing at somebody else would knock them down. And in fact, it was a shot from a paratroop strapped in a tree that knocked me out at that particular time.
You were sniped again.
More or less, you could say that, but it was more than that, really. I mean, there were quite a few of them up there, and they were just firing at anything. They weren't waiting.
They weren't picking up officers and NCOs.
I think they might have been.
It was a usual policy with the Germans.
Yes,
too.
I think that is very, very likely.
Shoot at the man with the map or the pistol.
Yeah.
Or
because I can't remember how long it was after we left the road. It could have been a few minutes. It could have been 10 minutes because there was such a lot going on.
But you were in the vineyard then when you were hit.
Yes, yes. I was in the vineyard, but I couldn't have been too far from the road because the guy was up a tree and the poplars were on the road. And I had gone forward a little towards the sunken road, but I hadn't got all that way away from the road.
But were you standing up when you
Yes, I was. I saw him at the moment that he saw me, in actual fact, and I raised my pistol and fired at him as he fired at me. One of my chaps got him as well. I don't know whether I...